The test is in four parts, part 1, part 2, part 3, and part 4. Now look at part 1.
Part 1.
You are going to hear a conversation between Angela and Mr. Ray. Angela is applying to join the library. Listen to the conversation and complete the form below. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 5. Now we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will never hear the recording a second time.
Hello. How can I join the library?
Well, you need to make an application. Would you like to do it now?
Yes, if I can.
One moment, and I'll get the form. Now, I just need to ask you a few questions before you sign at the bottom.
Okay.
Your full name, please.
Angela Mary Price.
Price?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, and your address?
Apartment 3, 86 Bridge Street, Pimlico.
Bridge Street? That's just near here, isn't it?
Yes, not very far.
Good. So the postcode must be 2065, right?
Yes, that's right.
Now, your telephone number. I need both home and work if you have them.
My home number is 8763-5142. And work is 8456-1307. Do you need anything else, like ID or something?
Yes, your driver's license will do, if you have one.
Right. It's easy to remember. I know it by heart. 4040AC.
I'm afraid I'll also need to see it.
Okay. Here it is.
Thanks. And your date of birth, please?
24 March 1981.
Okay. Thanks. That's the most important part completed. But if you don't mind, I'd also like to ask you a few questions for a survey we're conducting.
Yes, that's okay.
Now you have some time to read questions 6 to 10. As the conversation continues, answer questions 6 to 10.
What kind of books do you like to read? Here's a list to look at.
Oh, it varies from time to time, but I always like to relax and learn about other countries I might visit one day. I don't like anything too heavy or serious, unless it's about animals or the environment. I'm not really into sport very much.
Anything else?
Well, I do like entertaining at home. You know, dinner parties. So I suppose you'll have something for me in that line. The pictures in those books always make me hungry, although they never seem to turn out exactly as they look in the books.
Fine. I think that's all I need now, except I need you to sign here on the application form. Oh, and I almost forgot. The membership fee is $20, which is refundable if you no longer stay a member.
There you are. Do I sign at the bottom here?
Yes, that's right. You can borrow books now if you wish, although your membership card won't be ready until next week. So if you want to borrow today, you can pick up your card when you return your first books. That's if you want to take some now.
I think I will, but I'll have a look around first.
Okay, take your time.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part two.
Part two.
You will hear part of a radio program in which the manager of the Apollo Leisure Center is interviewed about the center. First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 16. Now listen to the first part of the interview and answer questions 11 to 16.
Next, I'd like to welcome Carol Brown, manager of the Apollo Leisure Centre. Carol, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, Carol, the Apollo seems a familiar sight, but how long has it actually been here?
Well, we started negotiations to take over the previous Active Life Centre that used to occupy the premises in 2000 and planned to open in 2001, although the usual delays meant it was 2002 before we were up and running.
And do you have quite a mix of members, or are you focused on certain groups?
It's pretty broad, actually. There are something like 200 adult members, so that's our biggest group. But we also have as many as 100 youth members, together with about 50 family group members. And I think we'll see that section growing to 100 over the next couple of years.
Healthy numbers.
Yes, and we'll be developing the centre to make it even more attractive. We're hoping eventually to build in a rock climbing wall, which would make a useful addition. We've already opened our swimming pool, which is hugely popular, and we'll have a massage room open within 12 months.
Now, I understand you have different categories of membership.
Yes, to suit every pocket. Blue membership includes all facilities for the member and a guest at all times, which is good for people with unpredictable timetables. If you can make it during daytime hours, red membership gives you excellent returns for your fee. As for only half price, you can use all the facilities during the day, and they're actually less crowded then. Green membership is designed for people who are only able to come infrequently, and so, of course, costs less.
And there are chances to socialise?
Oh, certainly. Our cafe is very popular and is a nice place to wind down and chat after working out or whatever. In fact, while it used to shut at 8, we've extended that to 9 now, with last orders taken at 8:30. It serves a whole range of food and drink.
So if someone wants to join, what do they do?
Come and see us. We'll give you all the details. The induction process takes about an hour and a quarter, which includes 3/4 of an hour on average with a personal trainer and something like half an hour being shown round the different facilities.
So we'd be well looked after.
Definitely.
Now you have some time to look at questions 17 to 20. Now listen to the rest of the interview and answer questions 17 to 20.
OK, now, Carol, can you give us some idea of what we could expect to get as members of Apollo?
Sure. Well, let's take next Monday as an example. The early evening would begin with the programme of classes. Of course, members would also be at liberty to do their own thing. I'm just talking about the listed classes that we'll be offering. So let's say you're free to turn up at 4 p.m. You could spend an hour in a class that we call gentle exercise. This isn't a hard workout, as you might be imagining it, but a session designed for those who perhaps are not used to rigorous classes and would like something to ease them in.
Right.
The next thing on offer will be starting at 5, and again, it'll last for an hour. In contrast, this is what we simply call weightlifting. It's certainly not for softies, but this strenuous session is, of course, carefully monitored, and we wouldn't let anyone do anything silly.
Oh, well, that's reassuring.
And then, kicking off at 6:15, you'll be welcome at a class aimed at promoting better lifestyles, which we run under the banner of healthy living. We'll give you all sorts of useful advice about just living better.
Oh, sounds easier than working out.
And probably at least as important.
And rounds the evening off nicely.
Oh, no, we still have one more offering.
Oh.
These days, so many people are working, frankly, more than they should be, and we try to combat the stress that that creates by encouraging those who can to take part in the class we call relaxation. You can learn lots of helpful techniques for staying calm when you think everything's going terribly.
Now you're talking.
So we'll see you on Monday.
Ah, no.
That is the end of part two.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part three.
Part three.
You will hear a female and a male student talking about the mock exams that they have just taken. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 25. Now listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 25. So, what did you think of the practice exams last week?
You mean the mock exams?
Yeah. I thought some of them were tough.
They were certainly hard and generally they were very long.
Yeah, they were spread over a whole week, which made it impossible to relax.
Exactly. But what did you think of each test?
Of the seven exams we did? The least enjoyable for me were the 2 3-hour essay papers.
Why didn't you like the essay papers?
I'm not particularly good at writing things down like that in a short space of time. And I don't think it's a good way of testing our theoretical knowledge of medicine.
I'm the opposite, I'm afraid. I'm much better in the written essay exams than the other types of tests. But what about the 2 multiple choice exam papers in basic science and anatomy?
They weren't too bad. If you didn't know the answer, all you had to do was guess.
That's okay, but I never feel comfortable with guessing. And you know that there is research that shows that women are disadvantaged when doing multiple choice questions compared to men.
You've mentioned this before, but I'm not sure I believe it.
It's true. Multiple choice questions benefit men more than women. They are a male construct.
If you say so.
It's not if I say so. Anyway, you have to be careful with multiple choice questions because of the negative marking. That can really bring the score down if you keep guessing and get all of the guesses wrong. It's double negative.
Yeah, that is a danger.
What about the role play? Did you like that?
Yeah, with the actors and actresses as simulated patients. Yeah, I thought that was by far the best part of the exam.
Why was that?
What I liked about it was during the 24 test stations, we had a chance to show what we know about communicating with patients and show our practical medical knowledge, etc.
Yes, I think I agree with you there. I enjoyed all of the stations, but I can tell you I was tired at the end. I have done a practice exam with 12 test stations, but not 24. It was exhausting, but also exhilarating.
I agree completely. It lasted nearly 4 hours in total with the break. Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 26 to 30. Now listen carefully and answer questions 26 to 30. What did you think of the other two exams?
The two problem-solving tests? I didn't think I was going to handle them very well. But in the end, I think they went better than I thought they would. What I liked most was the test where we had to work in groups of four, and to solve a problem, we had to prioritise actions.
That was very interesting. I'm not sure that I did very well in that, though. Did you feel comfortable being in a group of four and having four examiners watching you as you discuss the problem?
We did practice it several times before. You learn to forget that someone is watching you.
But some people are better at speaking in group situations like that, and they get the best marks.
The test doesn't just assess whether people can talk a lot. It's about showing you can listen, organise your thoughts, and then show you can be part of a team, allowing other people to speak.
Well, we'll have to see how it goes. When do the results of the mocks come out?
They said next week, and then it's the finals 2 weeks later.
Yeah, we've got that to look forward to. What is the policy on resits?
Why? Are you planning to fail?
No, but, well, you know what I mean.
The resits are held in September, and if there is any problem after that, it goes to appeal.
We'll just have to make sure we don't fail any part of the whole examination. I certainly wouldn't want to do any of it again.
Me neither. It's hard when you are not allowed to fail any of the exams.
I bet they don't have that policy in any other subject.
Probably not.
That is the end of part three.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part four.
Part four.
You will hear a lecturer talking about the process of fossilisation.
First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
The foremost exhibition in any great natural history museum is almost invariably a skeleton of a large dinosaur, often the famous Tyrannosaurus rex, or T-Rex as it's usually known. Thus, one would think that these skeletons are plentiful, one for each museum, and more to spare in the basement. Well, here's an interesting fact. Almost every one of those T-Rex skeletons are just copies of the original fossils, and we only have 20 sets of these in the whole world. And the most complete is still missing one-fifth of its bones, and the rest are missing a lot more. And given that these dinosaurs once numbered in the thousands and existed on this Earth for perhaps 3 million years, you can realise an obvious fact. Fossilisation is actually an extremely rare occurrence. Fossilisation can only occur when, after an animal dies, it is buried in soft mud or silt relatively quickly, before the body completely rots or is torn to pieces by scavengers. Given this fact, the overwhelming majority of fossils are in marine sediment, where former marine life sank to the sea bottom, where sediment was being continually deposited. This means that we have a fairly good idea of the life in Earth's ancient oceans, but a much sketchier view of the land-based life forms. Fossilization on land needs water and mud, meaning that it is most often near ancient river sites and lakes. But it is still so rare that there are, in fact, large stretches of geological time about which we don't quite know what was happening at all. So, given that fossilization is so rare, the natural question is, what can increase its odds? Well, fossilization mostly occurs with organisms which meet three basic criteria. One, they must have hard body parts, for example, shells, plates, bones, and teeth. Unfortunately, the soft parts just rot away far too quickly to be fossilized. And I say unfortunately because it is often the soft fleshy features that most interest us. An elephant's trunk, for example, would not fossilize, and from the skeleton alone, we would never know the trunk was there. The second criterion for more likely fossilization is that the organism in question must have existed in considerable numbers and be spread over a wide geographical range. This simply increases the statistical probability that one of them will one day be fossilized and hopefully found. Finally, and by the same logic, the species needs to have existed on the Earth for a long time, and the longer, the better. So, these are the three main criteria, but there are others. Being a large size, for example, helps us to notice and discover them as fossils more easily. And being a marine organism, as mentioned, helps also. Trilobites, a strange sort of ancient crab, are a perfect example. Their body structure was one of hard plates. They existed over virtually the whole world of their time and over a huge span of geological history, over 250 million years, in fact, one of the longest ranges of any creature ever. Added to this, some species could grow to relatively large sizes, and they lived in the sea. Perfect! These creatures meet all the criteria, and as a result, museums all over the world are spilling over with trilobite fossils of all shapes and sizes. As far as fossils go, they are common. So, let's think about T-Rex once again. It too basically meets all the criteria that we mentioned. It has hard parts, being the bones, had some dispersion, and had been around for a long time, although it cannot compare to trilobites in this respect. However, it does have one important advantage over trilobites. It is large, very large, which means we can discover it far more easily than many other fossils. And here's another advantage. Dinosaur hunters are a dedicated and fanatical breed, continually at work in all the likely sites of the world. Basically, us human beings are fascinated by these creatures. So much that we are always searching for them, probably more than any other types of fossil, meaning that more T-Rexes will inevitably spring up in the future, and one is certainly glad for this.
That is the end of part 4.
You now have half a minute to check your...